everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of the Big Bang and Creationism podcast. The title of this week's podcast is Going to the Sources, a Critique of the Seattle Debate and a Creationist Lecture. Now, over the last 2 weeks, I attended a lecture in Seattle. It was kind of a discussion, actually, between the Discovery Institute, which was represented by a man named Stephen Meyer. He's one of the heads of the Discovery Institute, and a UW Earth Sciences professor by the name of Peter Ward. And I also attended a lecture in my local community by a creationist. It was at a church. So the entirety of this podcast, I guess, is going to be going over both of these and explaining where the creationist and intelligent design movement has gone wrong in their claims. As you might have guessed, I'm going to be leaving out a creationist claim section this week because, partly because I basically went over a whole ton last week with Zachary Moore, and also because this week is in the mix of talking about and commenting on these two things I attended. I'm also going to be discussing their various claims and the errors that they made in presenting them and why their claims are not science. Also, I'd like to mention that this podcast is coming out a bit later in the week than the rest of them have been because my allergies have gotten pretty bad in the spring. They usually flare up, and so earlier this week I was sniffling and my allergies had come in pretty full force, so they've kind of cleared up now, and so I'm able to do the podcast without sounding all nasally, and I'm able to actually do it. So, as I stated, this week is going to be just a critique of these two anti-evolution events that I went to. I already explained what they both were. I'm going to start with the creationist lecturing about evolution. I have less to say about this one, so that's why I'm going to do it first. And the second one, I also have clips from the actual debate, whereas the first one I just heard this guy talk, and I think they had tapes where I could have gotten his lecture that he just said, but it was a tape and I don't have any way to transfer that to the computer, so I wouldn't be able to show you what he actually said. So regarding this first debate, I had a mailer a few weeks before this event. It was called Explore Prophecy, and it said on Tuesday, May 2nd, they had one called Creation or Evolution. I decided this would be fun since it's my area of interest, and I invited two of my friends who kind of share this interest with me. So we got there around 7 p.m., and we had some friendly talks with the people out there, handing out various things, and then we waited for the event to begin inside the church. Now, the speaker was a man named Richard, and he had apparently gone on other places in the world speaking about these issues. As he had stated, I think he had been in Europe recently talking about the same thing. Now, this man made it clear that he was not very well versed in science. He stated that in the middle of the event, actually, after making some scientific claims, which I kind of found ironic that he would make claims about science only later to admit he does not actually know much about science, and he was not willing to defend his views when presented with opposition by, I'll talk about it a little later, but he had people come in who were students of a professor, and they were going to basically refute what he was saying, so I'll get to that in a bit. One of his first statements was, and this is basically verbatim, "Evolution is not science, it is a theory." And no one objected here, which I kind of found odd. I had to bite my tongue to not speak out. But the obvious flaw is that he's making a fallacy of equivocation. This man, Richard, was kind of mixing the layman term theory, which is guess or hypothesis, we've talked about this a bit before, with the scientific term. Theories are, like, probably the best level of science that one can get. It explains a large body of facts. That's what science is out to do. It's not a guess that he made it out to be. For the first 10 minutes or so, he was implying that evolution was the same, it was synonymous with atheistic materialism. Now, this is obviously going to make people choose between God and science when they shouldn't have to. So by linking evolution with atheism, it's going to turn lots of religious people away from science and force them to accept this special creation view, which is not backed at all by the scientific evidence. Richard stated a little later that evolutionists say there was a Big Bang. He seemed to be borrowing Kent Hovind's definition of evolution on this one. Just because someone accepts evolution and the Big Bang doesn't mean that the Big Bang is a part of evolution. And a bit of an aside on this, I had a discussion with one of my creationist friends on Friday about this, and he was saying that he was basically repeating the same argument. Well, you evolutionists, you believe the Big Bang, right? Doesn't that make the Big Bang a part of evolution? My response was, not any more than physics is a part of chemistry because I accept physics and chemistry as valid science. Are they somehow, is one of them dependent on the other one simply because I accept them both? No, it's not a logical argument. And this is what Richard and my friend were thinking. So that's where their argument goes wrong there. And then we have the infamous missing link. He brought up the missing link, but didn't really say what it was. He assumed people knew that there were a bunch of missing links in evolutionary science, and that because we lack these, therefore evolution is not true. So, and my creationist friend also on Friday had brought this up. What about the missing links? My tactic on this is to ask him to specify what missing link they're actually talking about. Because they aren't really specific. And when they do state that there is a missing link, say, between humans and our common ancestor, then you can attack what their argument actually says. I'll go on a bit of an aside with my friend. He was saying that there's a missing link between modern humans and our common ancestor. And I said, well, no, we have a bunch of these fossils. And we got into a bit of a discussion, and it ended with him kind of saying, oh, okay, that's interesting. And that's where it went. So creationists, they kind of think that we only have a few hominid fossils. For instance, they say we have Lucy, but that's the only fossil of her kind that we have. This isn't true. We have many specimens of the species that is the same as Lucy. The thing that scientists do when they write these books, they mention, oh, here's Lucy. It is one of the key findings that we had in finding a new species or part of the hominid lineage. But it's not the only fossil we have of Lucy. I mean, we only have one fossil of Lucy, but it's not the only fossil of the same species as Lucy. I read a book by Richard Leakey that stated we have thousands of specimens from about the time period of about 3 million years ago to now of human beings and pre-human hominids. So we don't really just have a few fossils, we have a whole slew of them. Moving on with the creationist, though, this is when the Richard guy said he really did not know much science, stating that carbon dating gives us ages of 15 billion years, the next time 10 billion. Well, for those of you who have listened to the carbon dating episode that I did a long time ago, we know that carbon-14, which is the radioactive form of carbon, has a half-life of 5,700 years, and that carbon dating does not work past about 50,000 years because there's so little radioactive carbon to compare to make a ratio with the carbon that's actually left in the fossil. So carbon dating doesn't work past 50,000 years, and here we have Richard stating that carbon dating sometimes gives us ages of 15 billion years and the next 10 billion. I think what he meant to say, of course, was that radiometric dating will give us various ages for things that are along the lines of billions of years. But this shows that he doesn't really know about the science what he's talking about. If he makes this kind of confusion, no scientist who would be discussing this would make that kind of an error. And here is where we get to his story about the professor that I kind of hinted at in the beginning. His story was that a professor heard about this Richard guy going around and talking about creationism and why it's right and evolution is wrong, according to him. And so the professor was going to get all of his students, I believe he was a geology professor, and they were going to have their rocks and their fossils, and they were going to go show Richard, I think his last name was Halverson, why what he was saying was not right, why what he was saying was not science, and how evolution is correct. And when they were walking into the event, according to Richard, he stopped them and said, "Now, I may not know much about science, but I do know God is real because he changes lives." And that was supposed to be his proof that he doesn't need to back up his scientific claims. That because God is real, therefore special creation is. And that logically doesn't follow. But, of course, he had already told his audience that evolution is basically atheism. So no one seemed to notice that when he admitted he knew nothing about science, it didn't change their view that he wasn't arguing from a correct point of view to say that evolution was wrong and creationism was right. Here's the science, here's what science says. And then halfway through, he suddenly admits that he doesn't know much about science, but he knows God is real. And because he already linked evolution with atheism, people therefore conclude that, oh, he doesn't have to know much about science. If God's real, so is special creation. And of course, this is kind of, for lack of a better word, insulting to those who accept both evolution and Christianity or any other religion. Their religion is in no way in conflict with what science currently says. Now, he talked a bit longer, and then the lecture ended in a prayer with no question on answer time. I was kind of upset about this. But fortunately, he's going to be here for, I believe, 2 more weeks. And I think I might go back to discuss with this man why what he was arguing was not actually science, and why he was trying to make a dichotomy between religion and science. He was trying to make people choose between accepting science and accepting religion, when that choice doesn't really have to be made. People can accept both. And by doing what he was doing, he was kind of putting people off from accepting science and making them accept a fundamentalist interpretation, a literal interpretation, of the book of Genesis. Now, going back to an earlier date, on April 26th, around the same time as the other lecture was, I think it was around 7:30, my dad and I and some friends and her mother, we all went to see this discussion between Peter Ward, which is the Earth Sciences professor, and Stephen Meyer, one of the leading heads of the Discovery Institute, which is the major intelligent design group located in Seattle. In the front of this discussion hall, it was in the town hall of Seattle, it was a pro-science group, and they were handing out flyers and denouncing intelligent design. And there was a lot of discussion, of course, going on between people who wanted to teach the controversy, those who accepted intelligent design, and those who accepted evolutionary science. I overheard some dialogue between two people, which ended with, I believe, in the fair exchange of ideas, which I'm sure this was the one of the guys who accepted intelligent design who was talking about the teach the controversy ploy. And the teach the controversy ploy gives people the impression that there's actually a controversy among scientists, when there isn't. Instead, they prey on the American people's sense of fairness, and they get people to think, oh, look, there's a controversy here. Well, we should be fair and teach both sides. And yes, it's undoubtedly true that there is some sort of controversy among the American public, but to conflate that to there's a controversy among actual scientists, there really isn't. There are a few dissenting voices, just like there are a few dissenting voices that the Earth orbits the Sun instead of the other way around. I believe there is a recent publication in the news about someone who wrote a book about why Galileo was wrong. I believe that was the actual title. And he continued to talk about why the Earth is the center of the universe and why the Sun orbits it. Okay, there are people in the scientific community who actually accept this view. But does that mean there's a controversy among scientists and that we should teach both geocentrism and heliocentrism? No. There are a few people who don't accept it, just like there are a few scientists who don't accept evolution. But does that mean that intelligent design is somehow an equal theory with evolutionary theory, and that it should be given equal time? Not at all. And this debate, as I think I stated before, was recorded, so I'll be playing various excerpts of the debate as time goes on. So we started off with hearing Stephen Meyer, who was the Discovery Institute guy. He was going to explain what he thinks intelligent design actually says, and here is what he says.
The theory of intelligent design holds that there are certain features of the universe and of living systems that are best explained by an intelligent cause rather than an undirected natural process.
Now, for those of you who are interested in actually listening to the entire debate, maybe you think I might be misrepresenting what Myers is saying or what Peter Ward, professor of Earth Sciences, is actually saying, you can find the debate or the discussion on the Discovery Institute's website, and I'll put a link to that on the blog. So if you want to actually check out the debate for yourself and hear it in its entirety, feel free. I find it kind of ironic that later in the debate, Meyer tries to insist that intelligent design does not rely on the supernatural, and yet here we hear him comparing intelligent design with the naturalistic cause behind Darwinian evolution. And shortly after he tells us what intelligent design says, he tries to give us some evidences for intelligent design, and then after that tells us what intelligent design doesn't say.
The kind of features we're talking about are things that have been discovered in science over the last half century. The fine-tuning of the laws of physics and chemistry in the area of physics. The exquisite nanotechnology that has been discovered inside cells. The miniature machines, the engines, the sliding clamps, the protein copy machines. Now, in saying that, it's important to understand what we're not saying. We're not necessarily challenging the idea of evolution per se, at least as defined as change over time or even common ancestry. But we are challenging the specifically Darwinian idea that life is the result of a purely undirected process that mimics the powers of a designing intelligence.
Now, the professor at the UW, Peter Ward, he is asked to explain what intelligent design is from his point of view the moderator of the debate asks him to put it in a scientific context, and here's what he says.
It's not a theory. That's the thing. It's not science. It's not a theory, so I can't explain it as a theory. I can explain it as a political dogma.
A little later, the moderator of the discussion asked a question to Stephen Meyer about what was wrong with his article, which he had put in the PI, Seattle PI, explaining what intelligent design had to argue against evolution, what it was actually arguing about. And here's what Stephen Meyer said.
But here's why we quibble with your definition. When we argue for design, we're not arguing based on a negative assessment of the powers of various naturalistic mechanisms, natural selection, for example. It's not just a critique of natural selection. This is so complex, natural selection couldn't produce it, therefore it was designed. That's not our argument.
I don't really understand how Meyer can say that this is not what intelligent design is arguing. Of course it's what intelligent design is arguing. They're saying, here are these parts in the natural world. They look like machines, and evolution does not seem to be able to explain them right now. Therefore, they were designed. That's obviously arguing what his point is. Moving on, though, we begin to notice an obvious flaw in what Meyer is actually trying to say about the designer. He's trying to say that the designer, we don't know the nature of the designer, but we do know it, and you'll see what I'm talking about in this next clip.
A cause that is sufficient to produce digital code. We know that that cause is intelligence. From our own experience, Bill Gates, for example, has said that DNA is like a software program, only much more complex than any that's ever been written. Now, we know from experience that when you build things that function like software code, inevitably there's a mind or an intelligence involved.
Here we have Meyer making the fallacy of assuming that the designer thinks exactly like he does. Here's what his argument should be if it's supposed to logically follow. We know humans make code. Okay. Now, if Meyer wanted to make his argument follow logically, he would then claim that humans made the gene code because genes have code and humans make code. We have no reason whatsoever to believe that this intelligent designer thinks like we do. A bit later on, we have Peter Ward kind of discuss what science is actually about and how one of the key tenets of science is to have a possible falsification for everything in science. And then he asks Meyer, what could actually falsify intelligent design? And Meyer seems to kind of skirt the issue. He doesn't really explain a possible falsification for intelligent design. He just says what intelligent design says and why it's better than evolutionary theory.
We really need to, first of all, I think a nice thing to do right to begin here is instead of asking what is life, what is science? Science is not an assemblage of facts, truth, not capital T, truth. Scientists test things. And so a way that I would approach and have approached this idea about intelligent design is ask the question, which you can also ask of evolutionary biology, what set of data that you could find would totally convince you you're absolutely wrong? And I could pose this to Stephen. I know what I would do. If I could go out and I would find a dinosaur fossil with a human head in the jaws of a T-Rex, I guarantee I would not be accepting evolutionary biology in its current guise. Now, it seems to me that a major test of ID, if that designer is so damn good, why is it that 99% of all species ever produced are extinct?
This next little bit I thought was kind of funny, so I decided to throw it in. It's basically Myers commenting on Peter Ward's friend, his work on RNA or DNA, which was kind of helping people who had hepatitis B. And here's what they say.
Using evolutionary
brilliant
principles.
Brilliant design engineering.
It certainly was. And he used it to help kill off a highly undesigned but very bad bug.
And here we have Peter Ward coming right out and asking it, who or what is this intelligent designer? And here's what Meyer has to say in response.
So, Stephen, who is this or what is this designer in your view?
In my view, the designer is God. Okay, but David's. I don't know if our guys at Discovery hit you about this or not.
But how do we test for God? Science cannot.
I'm not saying we can test for God.
Then ID can't be a science because we can test for the process.
You've made a jump in logic.
So Ward made a very valid point that science, which works in the philosophical assumption of methodological naturalism. We cannot test for God. It does not work. You cannot do it. And you can also kind of hear in the background the boos in the audience. You can hint at the religious tension that's in the crowd. And that kind of comes into play a little later. And actually at the very end, basically, of the debate. But for now, we have Meyer coming out and trying to make an analogy to what intelligent design is saying, which is a very poor analogy using archaeology and how we can detect humans doing stuff based on what we know humans do.
If you're an archaeologist and you see inscriptions in the Rosetta Stone, you infer that it was a scribe, not wind and erosion.
Well, here Meyer is right. Archaeologists can determine if humans write things because they know how humans think. Why? Because they're humans. We know how humans think because we're human beings. Do we know how a designer thinks because we are a designer? No, if we see things in nature that look designed, it's because humans design things similar to that. We do not know of any other intelligent cause that creates these things besides human beings. And we do know that human beings do not create genetic code, or did not create the genetic code to create humans because we weren't here before we created ourselves. It doesn't make any sense. So, it's logical to infer that humans did something if the right signs are there because we're human beings. It's a perfectly valid inference. What's not perfectly valid is to say, here's something that looks designed because we humans know what design looks like, therefore something else besides humans designed it. It doesn't work that way. That is not a logically valid inference. In this next soundbite, we see right away that Meyer contradicts himself in the same sentence.
And intelligence. But it is a second-order philosophical question as to the nature and identity of that intelligence. When you see gene sequences that function like software code, you can see mind is at work,
how people...
but there's no signature. It doesn't say made by anyone.
So we can see design, but we don't know the character of the designer. We don't know how the designer thinks, but we know what his design looks like. How do we know he thinks like we do? We don't. And that's the problem with intelligent design. Now we have Meyer, who tries to pull out his archaeology analogy again, and Ward recognizes the argument for what it is. So here is that sound clip.
On the test basis that. Of time, how do you test that?
In
how
some
do
of the
test,
ways that I mentioned previously.
Science cannot test for the supernatural, and that's what
it
you're having.
Test
it
for
cannot
an
test for the supernatural. Science just cannot deal with what you want it to go. Therefore, it is not science.
If your argument was true, Peter, then we would not be able to test the conclusion that the Rosetta Stone had been made by an intelligent agent rather than a wind and erosion.
Oh, that's crap.
Nearing the end of this discussion, we have Ward addressing why teaching the controversy is nothing but an attempt to single out evolutionary science from the rest of science and trying to make it out as there are competing theories between evolution. That intelligent design is a competing theory with evolution, and that's the only thing they're going to single out. That's what teaching the controversy is all about. It's not about showing the flaws in Darwinian evolution, because there are knowledge gaps in every single scientific field. And by singling out evolution, the proponents of intelligent design are showing that their reasons for doing this are not scientifically based.
There are so many controversies within evolutionary biology. I mean, where do I start? We have, everywhere we look are controversies, but there are controversies in every science. There are thousands of controversies in physics or in chemistry or in any field of biology. Why do we single out evolutionary biology? The fact that we have controversies, just like Cobb County, Georgia, we put a little sticker on it, let's single out evolution. The fact that we have controversies somehow makes us less legitimate as a science. That's what science is. It is nothing but controversies. Why do we single out?
Shortly after this little blurb, Peter Ward addresses the political issue involved teaching intelligent design in the science classroom. Most evolutionary scientists do not say that teaching evolution is the most important thing. It doesn't really matter if they'll say it doesn't matter if students know about allopatric or sympatric speciation. That doesn't matter. It's teaching pseudoscience in the classroom that is the real problem and the flaw with putting intelligent design in public schools.
Like biology, like DNA, like astronomy, and we put it in the realm of politics. We change a science class to a politics class. Now let's say that every public school in America, as these folks want, teaches intelligent design, politics, next to science. What are American students like? How do they compete with the Chinese? How do they compete with the Europeans and the Japanese who don't do this? What do we do if we tell students the answer to that question is way too complex, forget about it, we kill curiosity? This will be my only heat at this point. Intelligent design taught in our schools will kill curiosity, and we become a nation of second raters.
Okay.
Think about this.
We're not advocating that the theory of intelligent design be required in the public schools.
I found this statement by Myers to be kind of ironic, seeing as he has helped write a book called Darwinism, Design, and Public Education. Now, to be fair, I haven't read this book, but from the reviews, what I can tell is it seems to imply that the book wants the teaching of intelligent design in public schools. So, I mean, I could be wrong, but it seems like Meyer is saying something and then writing a book that says the total opposite. So it seemed a little confusing what he was saying.
Our proposal is that students should learn the scientific case for Darwinian evolution in its modern and full glory, but they should also learn the scientific arguments against the theory as they appear in the scientific literature.
Now, a little earlier I said that the religious tension that was seen in the crowd would kind of come up again, and at the very, very end of the debate, at the very last question in the Q&A session, unfortunately I didn't get my question in, but the point aside, Meyer and Peter Ward were asked about their religious preference, their religious views, and how they kind of went alongside their views on what science was. If intelligent design was science or evolution was science, was that view affected by their religious views? And here's what they had to say.
I'll put it to both of you. Do you think, one, that your own religious beliefs have any role in our discussion here tonight? First, you?
I am a Christian. I think my religious beliefs have made me more open to explanatory possibilities in science than I would be if I were strict materialist. Because if you're strict materialist, you can't consider that an intelligent cause played a role in any event prior to the advent of humans.
Now, after hearing that clip, I think it's safe to make the inference that the large majority of advocates of intelligent design in that crowd were most likely Christians, either they were fundamentalists or just plain old Christians. There was a bit of a segment I cut out in the middle there, but it involves Meyer talking about Dawkins' claim that evolution allows you to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist, and few in the crowd were laughing about that. And then after that, and people had kind of attacked atheism, that they expected Peter Ward to just come out and talk about his religious views and what they were in regards to what his scientific views were. And to expect this of the man, and then people were actually coming out and yelling, "What is your religion? What is your religion?" I found it obnoxious. It was one of the things that really annoyed me about this debate, is that there were people who were trying to put it as, again, religion versus science, when it's not. And they were trying to, again, put it as evolution equals atheism. And that by admitting you're an atheist, that you have some kind of atheistic bias towards evolution, and that intelligent design is inherently wrong to you because you're an atheist. Well, that isn't true, but it's what the science says that makes intelligent design incorrect. But then people were expecting Peter Ward to come out and state his religious views, and I'm glad he did what he did, but they were trying to come out and have him say what his religious views were to try to put it as religion versus science. And here's what Peter Ward had to say, and I liked it so much I had to put it in full, and that's going to be the end of my discussion on this debate.
And Peter, you get the last word, but can you try to answer our question in your concluding remarks? Can you try to answer that question about your own religious beliefs, and does it have a role in our discussion?
Well, I just want to say that some of the greatest of all evolutionists, Fisher, Haldane, Dobzhansky, were devout Christians. There is absolutely, because religion and science are so separate, I mean, there is absolutely no conflict. Dawkins is totally...
Hey, could you just let him
finish?
Hey, is
that polite?
So good all
What's
night.
Wrong with you, yahoos?
Now, huh?
This is a polite discourse. Only he and I yell at each other.
We're going to let you finish.
Again, Dawkins, I think, has done a huge disservice by saying that you're stupid if you're religious. I mean, this is idiotic on his part. There is no reason that a devout scientist cannot be a devout religious believer. The two are different hemispheres. If you study... If you study science, in fact, it makes you more wondrous. Just having the ability to test, just having the ability to understand nature, I think gives you a profound sense of religious awe. As for me, this week I'm a druid.
Now, I like that ending, because Bruce Chapman, who wrote an article for the Discovery Institute, I think the next day, saying that Peter Ward dodged and dodged the issue of talking about his own religion. Well, the point is he shouldn't have to. He shouldn't have to say what his religion is, because it's not religion versus science. It's science versus pseudoscience. Pseudoscience being intelligent design. You cannot falsify, you cannot test intelligent design. You can test and you can falsify evolutionary theory. You heard Peter Ward discuss one possible falsification for evolutionary theory in his debate, or in his discussion with Meyer. So it shouldn't have to be atheism versus religion. It shouldn't have to be evolution versus some other competing theory, because it's not evolution versus some competing theory, and it's evolution is not atheism. So you cannot conflate the two. So this is the end of this debate between, or this discussion, I keep calling it a debate, but they wanted to say it was a discussion, between these two individuals. And I was very glad I was able to attend it. But I think the audience went home getting the wrong impression. I mean, one of the things Peter Ward did that I wasn't so keen on was that he, though I found it a bit funny, he was doing some kind of gestures, like Meyer was digging his own grave, and so Peter Ward is kind of making this gesture that he was digging his own grave, but I think it kind of conflated the issue and polarized the audience is what I want to say, is that he made it into some science is looking down upon this thing, but it really has scientific evidence for it. It's just helped to polarize the audience, and it was an issue that doesn't need to be polarized any more than it already is. Again, for those of you who want to hear the debate in its entirety, I will post the link that Discovery Institute has, and I'll put it on the blog. Until then, this is this week's episode of the Big Bang and Creationism podcast. If anyone has any questions, comments, concerns, you can send them to my email at rlippens@wavecable.com. And if you have any questions you want to put on the blog, not many people post on there, but if you want to, go ahead. I'm looking at possibly buying a website and having my own forum there for people to discuss this. But until then, I'll just go with the blog and my email as my sources for gathering what your thoughts are. So, I guess until then, just keep studying the issue, and we will reconvene next week to discuss more than likely what I've gleaned by writing a paper on inflationary theory. I've learned a lot more than I had known in the past when I did a little episode on inflation theory. So that's most likely going to be the topic for next week. And until then, have a nice week, and we'll talk next time.